This week on Future of Sex.
When I say sex tech, they're instantly like, oh, like sex online.
How frustrating is it that the minute I said that I work in the sexuality field, everyone started laughing at me?
There is still a huge discomfort with the idea of investing in sex.
And you move down a field like sex tech or an industry like sex tech, and you just see so many different things happening that might not be a reflection of your life.
Hey, I'm Bryony, and welcome to Future of Sex, the podcast that explores the evolving worlds of sex and tech. This second season is sponsored by our friends at WeVibe. Today, I'll be addressing a topic I get asked about almost every single week. How do I get started in sex tech? This practical episode is very much dedicated to those who want to dip their toes into sex tech. We'll address the stigma you face when you embark upon a career that involves the word sex. We'll get a peek behind the doors of sex tech school by turning the mic onto some of my students. And you'll hear from some established founders who are further along in their sex tech journey. By the end of this, you'll have some very clear action items, so get ready to take notes. You'll want to listen to the interview with Cameron Glover, a business coach dedicated to helping professionals make money from their passion in sex education, more than once. But before we get started, we just want to remind you, this podcast, and quite frankly, your new career in sex tech, will contain explicit language and adult themes. So make sure you've got headphones in if there are little ones around. Where to start? Maybe you've already thought of a great product idea, but you're unsure how to break into the industry. You don't know any investors, you don't know anyone in sex tech. Or you could be tuning in and you're at the very early stages of your career. Sex tech isn't something that's offered in college credit yet. Perhaps you've established yourself in an industry like advertising or finance and have grown bored of your work. Or you're one of the millions who got laid off this year and are looking at new options. Well, if you're ready to do something different, with its own unique challenges, keep listening. I get emails from people just like you all the time. And it's the reason I started my new venture, Sex Tech School, to guide people making their first leap into the sex tech industry. And after years of working in the industry, I spend my days talking to media, presenting at tech conferences and culture festivals all over the world. And sometimes I wonder, what is the most useful advice I can give you, other than just getting out there and trying? Because when I think about my own journey, a lot of it feels like it was trial and error. For example, putting this podcast out when I knew nothing about podcasting. It was a very critical first experiment. But there are some key steps you can take. And the first one is addressing your own circumstances and the stigma you'll inevitably face when you work in sex tech. So, are you nervous about working in a taboo area? Frances Tang, serial entrepreneur and founder of Awkward Essentials, set out on a mission to normalise and solve the everyday awkward and taboo encounters around hygiene essentials with her after-sex cleanup product. Here's Frances speaking at Sex Tech School last month.
I never wanted to be the face of the cum sponge. It was like not my goal or dream, but it's been incredibly important here because we don't want to communicate like, oh, women, like you have to buy this, like you shouldn't be dripping, like you're dirty, like that's not where we want to go at all. And I will say myself and a couple of other sex tech founders have had that misinterpretation from like the media and from writers when they're trying to spin a story with a negative angle. So I think making sure you communicate the personal story, at least in my particular case, is so important because then I say, yeah, it's a problem that I had and this is a solution. I'm not saying everyone needs it. I'm not saying women need it. If you enjoy that, totally fine. But this was my personal experience. And so I found that that is a very, very important element that we need to keep from a marketing perspective.
I think that's something that people grapple with as founders is, you know, maybe they're really interested in this space, but they're not ready to put their face to it. And it's kind of, it happened to me. And then it was kind of like, well, bad luck, you know? And I was like, oh, it's a podcast. No one will know who I am.
So in December of last year, we went viral on Twitter. And I would say 95% of the comments were really mean because Twitter is a very mean place. And so there was other women who were like tearing me down. There was women who are like doxing me. They like found my wedding photography website and they're like, look at this. And so it's rough. It's not easy. I come from a marketing background and I think you have to remember that all the controversy is a good thing. Like our sales shot up. The highest our sales have ever been was during that viral Twitter storm. And so it didn't feel good. People were berating my child, but like from a business perspective, if people aren't talking, then you should probably be shifting something so it's a little bit more interesting so they will talk about it, I guess is the best way to put it. I'm a solo founder. And I think also going back to that support system, so having that strong support system is so important, especially when you're in sex tech.
Support systems are key because the sex tech industry is just so small, and because we all help each other out, relationships is kind of like doing your degree in sex tech. And the number one rule in terms of keeping the relationships right is don't be a dick. It's that simple, really. Just help each other out and remember that you will grow with these people for your entire career.
There's so many highs and lows with this, and there's a lot of no's and there's a lot of barriers, which I'm sure Bryony's talked a lot about, and you just have to dig deep and have that resilience, and it really helps when you've got a community.
That's Billy Quinlan, founder of Furly, the audio guide to mindful sex.
You know, I think we look at all these really cool emerging technologies and we think, oh, that's the way to be really innovative and to be very cutting edge and to get noticed. But actually, there's been so little innovation in the sexual wellness space that really kind of rudimentary technology, like even an e-commerce site or even an app, you know, today an app is really rudimentary technology, can be really profound and have massive impact.
Sex tech is a relatively newly formed industry as a collective, and it's rapidly evolving and consistently in the spotlight because of the topic. As Billy mentioned, you really have the luxury to try whatever you want in this industry. But because it's so new, that doesn't mean that it will make you rich quick. In fact, quite the opposite. It might even drain your bank account in the beginning if you're not careful. I know you entered this industry because you're passionate about it, because it resonates with you, and maybe there's some sort of meaning in there that you've made that it means you can't make money. Many of the people I speak with, I argue all of them, come to sex tech because of a passion, because of an experience that made them want to get involved in this industry. And it's a very empowering career. It will change your life and it will change the people around you, who you are and who you hang around with. But I can't stress enough, it's important to start wrapping your mind around the business side of sex tech.
I do wish that sexuality professionals knew that it was possible to do this work and actually sustain ourselves. I get a lot of folks that reach out to me that the idea of even asking the question of like, well, how much money do you want to make doing this work? It's like unfathomable to them because they've already made, you know, the decision based on like their own experiences or what other people have told them that, oh, there's no money in sex. I can't make money doing this. I can't make a living doing this. And it's like, yeah, you can. We need to just like do business differently. So my name is Cameron. My pronouns are she, her, and I'm a sex ed business coach. So it's just a fancy title I created for myself. But essentially, I help sexuality professionals to build online profitable businesses, which is super exciting. So that's the gist of what I do. I also host a podcast called Sex Ed in Color, where I host conversations about the business of sex ed from the lens of being a sexuality professional of color. So I share resources and also interview other folks in the field to share their stories and expertise as well. So do a bunch of things. I was a freelance writer for about 5 years. And I think it was one of the assignments that I was doing. I just like ended up researching sex educators one day, literally popping into Google and asking questions. And I was just like, I saw all these incredible people. To this day, I don't even remember like what I saw or like who was included, but it was probably one of those roundup posts. And honestly, it was just a lot of white people. And I was just like, oh, I can do this. So I think in the same breath, like in that same hour, I also like opened up a new tab and I was like, how do you become a sex educator? And at the time, this was around 2015, 2016. So there weren't as many resources as there are today, but there were a few. So I did my research, I looked through a few things, and I ended up settling on a certification program. I kind of ended up stumbling into my niche now, which is the business of sex ed, right? So a lot of sex educators feel like they gravitate towards seeing their niche as either serving a specific population or working with a certain like subject, right? So like anatomy or STIs or polyamory. You see that a lot in the industry, but I was just like, I don't necessarily want to specialize in all this how-to stuff because I was really excited by the why of it. And I really struggled with figuring out what my thing was going to be. So I tried a bunch of different stuff. I did classes. I led workshops. I like actually got in front of people and, you know, did the actual action behind it and then found out that I didn't really like any of it. But the thing that I did find that I had a lot of questions about was the business side of it. Now, I don't have a background in business. I never took a business class in my life. I barely passed statistics in school. But I had all these questions, right, that went beyond just how do I calculate my rate? Because in my mind, I'm like, well, that I don't want to be hired by somebody else. I want to hire myself. So the idea of calculating my rate seemed like not really relevant to what I wanted to do, right? So I was really interested in like, okay, how do I create like a business that can run without me, especially? And also how can I, and this is very specific to me because I'm secretly a lazy person. So I was like, I don't want to work hard doing the same thing over and over again, right? I want to work hard doing something really well once, and then I want to get the most out of that as possible. So it was from there and also like asking the people around me like, okay, what are y'all also struggling with? Do people also have like these kind of questions? And they do. Like all my colleagues were asking the same thing and none of us could find resources. So that's kind of what led me to saying, okay, like this is something that's needed. And again, fuck it, I'll just do it.
I love your journey that started out on Google because I think it's so many people's journey when they're like, this looks like something I'd be interested in. Now, how do I do this? Mm-hmm. And really what you are now offering is information that you can't find on Google, but like we all, when we're starting out, we're like, oh, who do I ask? I don't know anyone else to ask or I don't know someone to ask and we go to Google. What's your basic advice for people that are looking to get started in sex education or sex tech? Like, other than consulting Google now, like, how do people find their thing?
Oh, gosh. I really love this question because there's so many different ways that you can do it, right? And I think that's also another misconception that people have. They think that you should know your thing right away. Like, it'll just magically come to you without even trying. And the reality is, like, you're going to have to do the hard work. You're going to have to get on the ground and get your hands dirty and just like try shit, right? Because most of the time we don't even know what we don't like or what we do like or what we like about it until we're in the midst of that activity. So I think it is really important that folks that are curious about getting into this work, like just dive into it. There's a lot of like overthinking that people do, especially I get this a lot in my audience as well of people that are like, I don't know where to start. Or they feel like because they feel like imposters, they can't start. And it's like, you don't get that experience. You don't get the clarity of knowing how to get started and what to do until you take action. So it's like all this other stuff that we tend to focus on, right? Of like having pretty aesthetics and a perfect like website, like all that's like not necessary, in my opinion. Like, the most important thing is just getting started. You can always refine later. You can always edit later, right? Your first everything is not going to be that great, but it's fine because you're getting out there and you're starting. And it's way easier to edit a first draft than to actually write that first draft. So yeah, I think the most important thing is to just get started, not overthink it, and just do it.
What about your advice for approaching either people in the industry, mentors, people that you look up to? Did you do that at the start? And like, what was your advice?
So I think that community is also really important as well. So in addition to taking action, if you can, you know, find community with other sex educators, with other folks in the sex tech industry, like definitely connect with us, right? Like follow us on social media, interact with us thoughtfully, consume our stuff. Like listening to podcasts like this are so great because we've only been recording for like 20 minutes and I've already dropped so many gems, right? That you can like take for free and like apply to your own life, right? So all that information is at your fingertips. And again, like it's almost like having a mentor or having access to someone in person, right? But in terms of reaching out to someone, I think that there's a few things that folks should do. So first of all, I think it's really important to do your homework on the person. I can't tell you how many DMs and emails I get where my name is spelled wrong, where I'm, you know, misgendered, where I'm just like all these different things, right? That you would think, oh, doy, yeah, people should do that. But, you know, just make sure you're doing your homework, right? If your question is something that you could Google and it's not specific to me or what my niche is or what my background is in, then, you know, maybe doing your own homework and seeking out that answer first would be more helpful. But I would tailor it specifically to like something that I can actually help with. So, for example, how do you get started as a sex educator is a question I get like quite often. And at this point, I just direct people to my ebook because that's going to give you the information a lot more concise than me taking the time to explain it and honestly repeating myself with what I say in the ebook, right? Versus, I think if somebody had a question more of like, what kind of like tool do you use or something like that, that's like specific to what I do or what I use, then like that's a more precise question, right? And also, I think it's really important to be mindful that, you know, I can't always respond back to questions, and that other people also too, like just different things go on in our lives. It's not even just like a matter of we're busy or inboxes look like ridiculous or whatever. It's also like, you know, we're people too. So just being patient with that, being mindful of what the ask is and making sure that you're doing your homework as well to send it on the proper channel. So I know for me, I prefer honestly business related questions in email rather than DM because it's a lot harder for me to keep track of them in DM. So making sure you're respecting digital boundaries as well.
This season of Future of Sex is brought to you by our partners at WeVibe, known for their couples vibrators, which we love. But do you know what we love even more? A sale and an extra 20% off. If you head to the WeVibe website at WeVibe.com, visit the sales page and pop in Future of Sex, you're going to get 20% off all WeVibe products that are on sale until the 19th of November. Thank you very much, our favorites and industry leaders, for a reason. They're consistently bringing innovation to sex toys and a damn good sale. What are some of the challenges that nobody really talks about or sees when they're trying to start out in a business like yours?
We don't have enough time, Bryony. There's so much. I'll try to be concise. I think the biggest thing, and this is something that I'm also like actively working through right now, is like the loneliness of it, specifically for sexuality professionals, because of the nature of the work that we do, people have a lot of assumptions, right? And I think a lot of our like work, it ends up being navigating around other people's assumptions and their own sex negativity before I even open up my mouth to like explain anything else about what I do. If I go to like a networking event or something like that, oftentimes I'm the only Black queer person in the room, first of all, right? And then other times it's like, even if I'm not, right, I'm often the only sexuality professional that's in the room. So other people have their own assumptions, right? Their own like sex negativity, their own like whorephobia that's connected to that, to where they're already making assumptions about who I am and what I do and the validity of me being in the room before I even say anything else. And that's really challenging and really lonely and something that, you know, I'm still actively figuring out how to work on and work around outside of me creating all my own spaces, right? Because sometimes I just want to like be in a room and just like vent with other people that get it, right? I don't want to always be like the one creating and managing all those spaces. And I know for me, like I try to be transparent about like my successes too, and just like showing like the validity of like, oh, I'm helping this many people. I'm making like this much revenue in my business. Like I'm doing all these things to show people that it's possible. But it's also like we have a responsibility, I think, to also pull back the curtain and talk about this, like the not so great parts, right? The parts of like, oh, I went into this space and like, how frustrating is it that the minute I said that I work in the sexuality field, everyone started laughing at me or people didn't want to interact with me because they were making assumptions about what that meant, right? And it's very lonely.
It's tiring. But then you get in a room with people that are in sex education and sex tech and you refill your cup a little bit, I think, which brings me to my next question. Let's talk about this connection between the business of sex ed and sex tech.
Yeah, I've been thinking about this a lot more with my work with Women of Sex Tech too, where I'm a board member, really exciting organization. And I think that there's so much overlap between the sex tech space and sex education. It's like, I don't see them as separate industries. I see them more like sibling industries, I would say, because I feel like, especially for sex educators, there's such a need for tapping into sex technology, right? To be able to educate people, to give them access to the information that they're already looking for, right? And censorship and shadow banning is such a major problem in our community, right? I think in both communities as well. Mm-hmm. Like we're constantly just battling algorithms that weren't made for us, weren't made with us in mind, and punish us for even existing, right? And punish us. I was also talking about this on Instagram earlier too, but even the ways that like people are conditioned to follow us or not follow us or interact with our content ends up punishing us, right? Because people only feel comfortable engaging with us from a secondary account. They don't like our photos because they're scared of what their friends will say, or they don't want it to pop up in someone else's feed. It reinforces this idea that sex is shameful and it's not something to feel empowered by. It's not something to be proud of. And it's something that people have to hide, which is completely untrue. And I think as well, on the sex tech side of things, being able to connect to all these communities of other sexuality professionals is so important, because just understanding the customer base of who's actually using it, what are the challenges and what are the things that people are asking for, right? And what do people need in order to navigate technology in these specific ways is so, so important. The reality is, whether you're in sex tech or a sex educator, you don't have the luxury of utilizing platforms in the same way. So we have to get creative. We have to hustle in different ways. But that also means that we have the beauty in the space to think about, okay, what does business look like for me? How can I incorporate all these different things that I'm passionate about, that I care about, that bleed into my work outside of just like giving people access to sex and sex information, right? Like, how can I bring in my full self and support myself while doing that? And I think it's possible to do all of the above. I don't think that we need to choose, but yeah, just even the idea of like that it's possible to make money and be happy and help people all at the same time. I wish more people knew that. Uncovering why you want to do this work. Like for folks that are listening, I really want you after this episode to ask yourself, why do you want to get into this work? Why do you want to be a sex educator? Or why do you want to be in sex tech, right? Because the money and the fame and the notoriety and the, oh, you're that person, like all of that is like extra, right? But the impact of being able to help people, of seeing folks feel empowered because they've been able to create something where they're not relying on a job to pay them that may be taken away tomorrow. They're tapping into the resources that they already have to create something that can help so many more people than they're able to help on a one-to-one basis. Like that is what lights me up. Everything else is just extra, you know? And mm-hmm. I think that everyone has the potential to do that. It's just a matter of understanding what that looks like and being able to ask the right questions and get the right support. I feel like it's really important that you're able to take action from the things that I share like freely, right? So definitely listen to this episode, take notes, right? But I want you to like take action from that. And you can totally get started with the things that I've talked about in this episode. But if you want the actual like step-by-step guidance on how to build a profitable online business as a sex educator or a coach or a consultant, then I want to invite you to join me inside my program, the Sex Ed Business Academy. So this is my signature 6-month business coaching program. And like I said, it just steps you through the A to Z, not just about how to create an offer, but actually how to create a sustainable business through different frameworks that I've used with myself, with my clients. And there's just so much there.
Today, there are plenty of resources to get started in sex tech, and I hope this podcast will be one of them for you. But if you're interested in going further with sex tech, maybe you've got an idea and you just want to get started, or perhaps you want to join a sex tech company, keep listening. And I want to give you a little insight into what goes on at sex tech school, what the program is like, and our next intake, which is in November. But before we move on to Sex Tech School, just a quick plug for one of our sponsors, Lover, a company in the sex tech space that I'm super excited about. I think they can make a huge impact on our sex lives. And what I love about it is they've distilled really decades of info, whether that's sex therapy or scientific research, into one app. And they create personalized treatment plans. So this isn't something you can Google or find on the internet. It's personalized towards what you need, whether you're struggling with your orgasms or your erections, your libido, any issue in the bedroom. Now, if you want to head over to lover.io, or you can just search for Lover in the App Store, you can download it and get your personalized treatment plan there. It's a fraction of the cost of traditional therapy. So really excited for you to try that. And if you've been hanging on and listening to me pump up a sex tech school, well, I want to tell you that over the last 4 years, just investigating this space, researching it and being a part of it, I realized I had accumulated quite a bit of information that doesn't really fit into this podcast about how you really start your journey into sex tech, the tangible steps that you can take, and the community that surrounds that and how to engage with it. So I'm going to hand it over to one of our Sex Tech School alum, Sam, who is going to describe exactly what happens at Sex Tech School and their experience.
Tell me a little bit about the experience at Sex Tech School.
I have to admit, the whole experience was an eye-opener. I went in not really knowing what to expect. I didn't really have any expectations because I'd never done any kind of online group learning before. And part of me, I think if you'd asked, would probably have expected just like a whole lot of people sitting in silence while someone went through a PowerPoint presentation for 6 weeks. And I'm greatly relieved that that wasn't what it was. But it was honestly like the diversity of ideas that came out of a group that on the surface you would have said looked like a lot of similar people was what really blew me away. You know, a whole lot of, you know, women of relatively similar age and relatively similar demographics, but our brains were so diverse and came up with such brilliantly different ideas that it was really, really exciting to be part of. Like it felt like being part of something really quite zeitgeisty.
Oh, I'd love to hear it. Well, tell us about a bit about more about your idea and plans that emerged through the school.
So when I first started, I was initially participating because I wanted to understand. I'm a researcher at heart. I just love like acquiring new information and just storing it in my brain and then never doing anything with it. And I thought, oh, this will be great. I'll get to learn and, you know, maybe I'll write an article explaining what sex tech is and that'll be worth my while. And it was literally through the process of participation that I came up with the idea of a digital agency. So we were given an assignment to research women in sex tech and the projects that they'd done and the wonderful things they'd come up with. And it was through looking at this, you know, wonderful roll call of women who have been changing the face of sex tech and looking at their websites and looking at their business models. And I realized that there were a lot of really great websites and really great services and products that were suffering just from poor SEO, which is, you know, my corporate background. And I realized that there was probably no one specializing in that area of how to, you know, leverage a website that is more or less on the fringes because it contains the word sex. And so I started thinking about it and I was like, oh, that's something I could help with. Maybe I'll do a shout out in the group. And then as we got further through the course and it was like, you know, you need to work on a project and come up with an idea. And I was like, maybe this is a thing I could do. And it was, you know, every step of the journey was just facilitated in a way that meant, you know, my idea was supported and I had a group of people there to give me feedback and advice and support and like a sounding board to kind of go, oh, I was thinking this, is that a good idea? Or, oh, what about a different direction? And it was just, yeah, this wonderfully organic evolution of an idea from, you know, just research through to development with feedback along the way. It was really like probably the most streamlined idea I've ever had in my life.
Thanks for listening with us today. This podcast was produced by David Lamb and myself, and this episode was edited by Chad Michael Snavely and the team at Sound On, Sound Off. To hear more of their work, visit chadmichael.com. And of course, if you've got any questions or feedback or just want to keep up with what I'm doing, follow us at Future of Sex on Instagram. Closing it out now, and we'll see you next week.